Hey everyone, my name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back, day whatever it is of the coronavirus pandemic across the world. My hope is that someday soon we'll be able to say this is all past us. I think that day is going to be a ways away, but hopefully everyone's staying good, mentally strong, and doing what you got to do in these weird, weird times. And yeah, we'll get through this, I swear. I'm not a doctor. Play one on TV, but I swear we'll get through this one way or another. Let's get your mind off some things for a bit. John Pollock is back, the one and only from postwrestling.com. He and I spent about an hour plus talking about all kinds of things in pro wrestling and MMA topics. His view on the great debate between Brian and Dave recently on what would you do with this year's WrestleMania. We talked about Dana White's insistence that UFC 249 is going to happen. Let's see. We talked about AEW, what he's liked, hasn't liked since the last time we talked. It's been a year since John and I talked, so we had a lot to catch up on. And also the Dark Side of the Ring documentary, the Chris Benoit documentary that debuted Tuesday night, and all kinds of other stuff as well. So if you like the conversations we've had in the past, you'll love this one. And then after the interview, I'll get in a little bit about this Dana White interview that he had with Kevin Ioli that dropped on Tuesday. So John and I record Tuesday afternoon. This happened afterward. So I want to give you a couple thoughts on that because it is, as I said on Twitter Tuesday night, I am not an alarmist with a lot of things, especially what's going on with the virus. And even I thought about 10 minutes in this, I couldn't believe some of what I was hearing. So we'll talk about that in a few minutes, actually after the interview. So a little over an hour. Let's get right to it. John Pollock, Josh Nason, of postwrestling.com. John of postwrestling.com. I'm talking way too much. Let's just get to it. Well, if you need to pick me up from all the coronavirus pandemic stuff going on, I have one for you, John Pollock. From Post Wrestling, he's here. He has been working in a lab on a cure for this, as I understand. And John, I guess you're here to reveal that you have a cure, right?
I wish I could, Josh. Dr. Pollock has not been able to come to any more answers than the people listening here. But nonetheless, I'm glad that I'm getting a bit of Josh Nason in my life to get through what everyone's going through. So you can never complain too much about Josh Nason.
You're definitely right about that. And John, the cure for everyone's woes is empty arena wrestling and empty arena UFC. Don't you know that? I mean, that's what's going to save the world.
It is interesting to watch the responses from the respective industries that we cover and the comparison to, you know, every other sports league, every other entertainment outlet. And I don't know if you've had the same impression, Josh, but like my timeline, it's almost two different worlds at times, where there's one that it's hyper-focused on the wrestling that is ongoing, and then that's mixed in with like just the increasing amount of urgency that they seem to be very much in conflict with one another. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I can understand what they're trying to do, but it's really tough to see everything going forward at a time when I don't think it's the best idea.
So before we get into that, I wanted to, obviously you're a very popular person with the wrestling public, as it were, and the world, obviously, and also good scoop on the WrestleMania tapings last week, by the way. Well done.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, there's lots of people, you know, reporting on just a chaotic period in WWE at the moment as they go through with all of this. So it's one constant is just everything seems to be moving so quickly, and it seems very chaotic at the moment. And just this week, as we're speaking, one of the craziest that they've had in recent memory.
No doubt about it. I want to give people that do not subscribe to Post Wrestling the update on how you're doing. You're up in Toronto, and you and I were talking obviously before we started recording, but how you, the family's doing and how you've had to adjust. Now, obviously people know that you do this out of your own home location, you and Wei Ting. And obviously your army of contributors, but kind of how have you had to adjust through this whole period?
Well, it's been a bit of an adjustment. Like the way me and Wei are set up is that, you know, it's not the two of us working together every day. We usually come together, you know, once or twice a week to do certain shows, like our live show that we do on Thursday afternoons. And we've been doing that remotely. I actually rent a office space here in Toronto that I typically work out of a fair amount of the work week, but have not been going there in light of all of this. So I've been at home. My wife's working at home, and we also have a 2-year-old son. So it's been an adjustment, but I think we've kind of adjusted to it and have a pretty good system going now, where the two of us are able to work. We're very good of just taking time from the other if they've got. Like my wife's like pretty busy on calls. She works at a university, so dealing with a lot of students during this time, it impacts everybody. So I think it's just once you adapt to your new situation, you get used to it fairly quickly. That's where I'm at right now. I can't complain too much other than, you know, it's like family members that I haven't been able to see in a little bit right now, where we're just being ultra cautious. My dad has had to work throughout this whole thing. They're just now kind of closing up like non-essential businesses here in Toronto and by extension Ontario that I think is overdue by now. But that's kind of the caution everybody is taking and not be, you know, relying on FaceTime and such with extended family and others.
Yeah, my in-laws live 10 minutes down the road, and obviously they haven't really seen their granddaughter. They went on vacation for 2 weeks before all this, and they have not they haven't seen her in about almost 4 weeks. And it's tough because they're heeding all the warnings, obviously, because they're in a they're in the kind of the danger demographic when it comes to if somebody is to get this, they're older, but they're also at the stage they're kind of like it's kind of weighing all the options, right? And we live in an area, it's not that highly populated, you know, not exactly a dense population, you know, decent amount of people live here, but not that big compared to Toronto or Boston or New York or something like that. It's hard because, you know, we could use them at this time to help watch our 3.5-year-old as my wife gets adjusted to her new role teaching from home, and that's a whole new thing. But yeah, I think that's one of the toughest things about all this is the fact that people that used to be able to rely on close family, whether it's sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, parents, all that, and they have to really kind of just make the choice of how they want to do that. Hasn't been talked about a lot. It's kind of just been referenced a little bit, but that aspect of life is certainly one of the biggest challenges of all, no doubt about it.
It's such an adjustment for everybody. Like I think as a society are not necessarily equipped for what is being asked of us now. And I think that's why you're now seeing almost, you know, pushback from some of like thinking that this is too far, when others, it's like, I think the prevailing message is as extreme as this is, it's not enough yet. This has to be done correctly, or this is going to be even worse than what we're experiencing now. Like it is a crisis, and I think everyone's kind of dancing around like how significant this is, but that's starting to settle in. Like there does come a time when urgency is necessary, and this is that time.
So I want to ask about obviously WrestleMania weekend, as it once was planned for Tampa. Now, much like Dave and Brian and a lot of our subscribers and so on, is that you guys are planning on going. And yeah, we're going to head to that event, obviously do your thing like you do every single year. And then I think it was probably a couple of days before we made the call to cancel. I saw that you had done a tweet that you were going to cancel your festivities as well. I was curious kind of just the process of going into that, what stuff you guys had planned, and then kind of the decision to finally cut the cord. Again, this was, you know, every day, as you mentioned, it feels like a bunch of days, right? So many things happening. I mean, this happened, a week and a half ago, something like that. I believe you guys canceled, or maybe even less than that. And then it feels like it was a year ago, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the exact day we canceled it, but it was something that I don't know if it's just because, you know, I brought this point up that those, you know, listeners of your show and ours that are heavily following the Japanese scene, I think kind of had like a heads up on just not so much that this existed, that COVID-19 was, you know, something to be concerned about, but just also like the threat level and what the implications were for preventable measures such as New Japan shutting down and other companies following suit, that once it arrived over here, like myself and Wei were discussing this, like, well, I would say over a week before everything happened with Rudy Gobert. That seemed to be the cultural turning point in North America. But, you know, the two of us were already talking about the idea, like, we do these Q&A shows over WrestleMania weekend and they come with a meet and greet. And how should we be handling these meet and greets? We don't want anyone to be uncomfortable. Do we avoid handshakes? Like, we have to kind of be sensitive to this issue. And as it just got closer and closer and then everything sort of fell through, like, I don't think Wei or I were really interested in waiting this thing out. It was this makes no sense for us to be going at this point. And it was a relatively easy call to make. And, you know, we work with a producer, his name's Robert Pearson, who has been kind of the nuts and bolts of these live shows that we've been experimenting with, and was just, you know, alleviated a lot of the just technical issues for us, getting the refunds back to everybody over the course of that weekend. And, really, it was the only decision to make by that point. So it was not a very difficult one for us to make. You know, we just had to handle, you know, the flights we had booked, the accommodations, which is all a drop in the bucket in the grand scheme of things.
Conversely, it's so heartbreaking to see, you know, all these indie groups and wrestlers and people that make so much money off that weekend not able to go. And these are, you know, workers that do, like, you know, 12, 13, 14 shows, you know, in a 3-4 day period. It's crazy. Like, there's so much content that swirls around us in every type of discipline possible, right? And I think sometimes we just get almost like paralyzed, like, exactly how much is around us. When you take something away like this, you kind of actually see the fact these are actually human beings doing this. And for every WWE that is set for money for life, you have these workers who, you know, may be big names, but they still rely on this money to work these different indie shows. And man, it's like, and obviously, you know, you guys do your show down there, we do ours, but there's so many other, you know, podcasting groups that do shows down there. There's all these different spinoffs and conventions and all this stuff, and just kind of see the bigger economy is going to take a hit, but just see the specific wrestling economy just from this 1 4 or 5 day stretch being taken away. I think it will make people appreciate more when it comes to, hopefully, knock on wood, next year and everything's good. Just how much this weekend really is important. Whether or not you like WWE or not, just the fact that this happens, it's such a huge thing.
Yeah, it's, you know, you really feel for those that, I mean, on the independent level, that this is such a lucrative weekend for them. When it comes to promotions, like, there's the big shows that this really props up their entire year, and it's, you know, the effects are felt long and far on this one. And I think for what we envision, as you know, we fast forward 12 months and assume that WrestleMania weekend is what we're traditionally used to next year in California, what does a WrestleMania week entail? Are there those promoters that are more risk averse than in prior years with the trauma that is the best word to describe what they are going through at the moment from the fallout this year, and what the level of demand is going to be for the different independent wrestlers that are able to get so many bookings? Like, what will a WrestleMania week look like a year from now because of the costs involved? And is it worth the risk? There's all these questions of, we don't know what the world is going to be like in 6 to 12 right. months, much less the wrestling industry, and what will the long-term effects are going to be here? Are independent wrestlers going to be much more open? Like, that contract comes their way, they're signing immediately for the security aspect of things.
Good point. I was just thinking about this the other day, in that yesterday I was washing dishes in my ring. I was listening to like a Wrestling Observer Radio, I think maybe from a couple days ago or yesterday, whatever. And I was thinking what happened, like, when it comes to the signing wars and people become free agents or they're thinking about that. Will this make them think a little bit differently in terms of, like you were saying, do they go with the guaranteed money when it comes to, if you're getting an offer from AEW versus WWE, do you, like, look, WWE is, they're not going anywhere. AEW may have this new TV deal, but does that change things at all? I think it's going to be really fascinating to watch, in that, you know, is WWE thinking of this and they're like, huh, we can really take advantage of this and lock some of these guys down who maybe 3 months ago said no, and maybe because of financial security, as you mentioned, you know, all of a sudden they lock more people up. And that's, I think that is going to be a fascinating kind of fallout part of this whole thing, is how this how this affects some of these workers that are like, look, I just went 3 months without any pay. I need something. I'll take whatever I can get, and I'll go to the performance center for a couple of years and be, you know, relatively anonymous if that means I can, you know, pay my bills, you know?
Yeah, it's obviously each person is going to have their thought process on something like that. But you can look at so many of, man, that for the longest time we had been talking like this is a wrestler's market to be out there, and you can go to the highest bidder or you can go independent and you can make your schedule. And there was that was a very attractive aspect to not being contractually bound to any of the major companies. And today I'm certain that a lot of those talents look at that security as something they're going to be thinking about. And on the other side of things, like these enormous offers that have been coming down specifically in WWE to talent that has been, their contracts have been coming due. What will those newer offers reflect as, you know, the WWE is certainly not going to be grossly impacted by this fallout, this period, but nonetheless, are they going to scale back on some of their offers as well in light of this? Like every company is taking a hit in some form or fashion here. It's just a case of which ones can mitigate it better than others.
I was curious where you came down on the great WrestleMania debate. And this is something that Dave and Brian actually just came up organically on a show last week. And I was curious what your take is. And for those that don't know what it is, basically, Dave's assertion, to paraphrase or thought, was that WWE should not do a WrestleMania in a couple weeks. They should hold that off until everyone gets the all clear, and that is almost their celebration back. That regardless if it's in July or they make the adjustment where the name has so much value that it's going to be a bigger thing when we're through the woods with all this stuff, and that's going to be kind of their official welcome back when it comes to an arena show, a stadium show, whatever it is on the other side of this, whenever that is. Brian's assertion was, you know, you can't really wait for these storylines, so you have to basically just bite down and just do this thing now and start to kind of just progress and move on, and that no matter what event you do at the tail end of this, it's going to be big because people are going to be able to actually go in person and see a professional wrestling match again. My thought initially was I agreed more with Brian because I don't think they'd be able to extend these programs out, you know, 4 or 5 months, especially with the indefinite nature of what's going on. But I kept thinking, like, you know, could you do a case where you essentially rebuild a WrestleMania card and whatever it happens down the road, you wait for it. And then whatever the card is at the time, that's the card. You essentially blow off some of these angles on Raw, on SmackDown, try to draw ratings there, and essentially just try to progress stuff. But then again, the unpredictable nature of what's going on, they might not be able to TV in a couple of weeks. It is something where I could find myself on both sides of it. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's certainly you can argue either side about what is the most the wisest way to go about things. I think if you're in the prism of Vince McMahon, that so many of us are going to view this company and what their attitude to these real life situations are going to be, you completely understand why they're going ahead and doing this, even though to me, I think it's a lot like the Olympics. Like, could Tokyo was not going to be able to force the hand of all of these countries and force them to come over. So is your reaction to present a stripped down version of the Olympics that it's going to be minimal countries involved? It's going to be empty stadiums. Potentially we're going to put these games through, and it's really nothing that reflects what the Olympics are, what they represent to people, their cultural importance. It's, we are just bound and determined to present these Olympics. Or do you go with what the new idea is, that by summer of 2021, we're going to present these Olympics and do so at a time when countries are more forthright to put their athletes on airplanes, send them to Tokyo, and make this a very big celebration of the life after COVID-19 that we have overcome, that is going to present, you know, a tremendous economic boost. And that's kind of, you know, to a much smaller scale, what I would have been utilizing WrestleMania as. Like, here is your biggest brand. And when you can run this properly, this is something that you can take to Florida, and WWE can be leaned on as a huge resource for economic stimulus in this part of the country. And I think that WWE would get great praise for that. Like, here is a time when the economy is in shambles, and here's an event that is going to bring a lot of people together, present your big show, while in the short term having to forego WrestleMania. I'm not like ultra critical that they're doing this in the empty arena. I'm more so hesitant at the fact that they're proceeding forward with shows, period. I just think that there is, I understand the argument that people are looking for this, some semblance of normalcy. WWE and AEW are providing that. But I just feel like, to your point, looking at these people as human beings as well, that are traveling at the moment in some cases, that are participating in professional wrestling, that seems something to me that is presenting a risk, regardless of how high a risk you're going to weigh that. There is some risk there. And on top of it, at a time when I think that it's just, you're not just putting yourselves at risk if you're participating here, it's putting others at risk as well. And I think now is the time for extreme caution. And that's kind of where I lie on things as a whole. So I've kind of just got to the point now, they're doing these shows, so that's been decided. So what's the best way and to minimize any kind of risk and maximize safety? And that's what, you know, you hope for the best with these companies that are going forward with these closed set productions.
I wonder if it would be different if it was, say, Triple H and Steph running the company versus Vince, because Vince hates people when they sneeze. Right. I mean, this thing must be just like driving him crazy, even though the other flip side of this, he is in the age range that needs to really avoid this stuff. Right.
But it's a control thing. It's always control.
It is. You're right. And he was the guy, as I said this last week, he was the guy that ran the first show after 9/11. He was a guy that wants to say yes when other people say no and run into the fire versus run away from it. And he's an opportunist. He sees an opportunity here to keep going and to be the only game in town. And I'm not surprised. I'm in the same boat as you that I've kind of just accepted these shows, both with WWE running, AEW running as well, because they're running shows as well. I was surprised last week they had that many people in the, ringside and all that stuff as they did. I was a little, I want to say taken aback is too strong, but it was definitely like, okay, this stands out. I think if you criticize one, you have to criticize the other. I'm not surprised because they see an opportunity to present a product and they know risks. And, you know, it is very odd that all these other groups are very well-off groups. Like, look, when it comes to major sports, entertainment, they're like, we're putting everything on pause, yet these entities keep going. We'll get to the UFC in a second. But, yeah, this is a Vince McMahon time. He's just going to keep pushing forward. And I am fascinated to see how a two-night WrestleMania looks, how this is pulled off again. And I feel bad for the Drew, assuming that they win, the Drew McIntyres, the Rhea Ripley's, Shayna Baszler, if she's to win, if not. But you kind of get the idea that this is their WrestleMania moment. Not to sound too schmaltzy, right? But this is their. This is what they've been waiting for. Anyone in the profession, no matter if you like WWE or not, you want to get to this point where you're main eventing or you're in front of 70,000 people. This is your culmination. And now to have it just taken away from you, your first shot out, that really sucks for them. It really does. The fact that, Edge and Randy Orton to build this amazing match, just this amazing build we've seen, it's going to take place in front of no fans. It's unfair in a lot of ways, but this, if that's the biggest unfairness in this whole thing, I guess we have to take it.
It just is at a time right now where, again, as you bring up, like, pretty much everyone else has shut down live entertainment at this point. And you just have to wonder, like, if the argument is, well, we're trying to provide escapist entertainment, people need some semblance of normalcy. It's like, I can understand that rationale that you have. And this is definitely providing entertainment for people. I don't dispute that. But what issues would we be creating if every sports league came down with that rationale? We'd have a real problem on our hands if all these other sports leagues that are losing out on tons at the moment, from the NCAA to the NBA to Major League Baseball, across the board, that could argue that running empty stadium games would be escapist entertainment, but they're opting not to do that. at the moment right now. And that's another aspect to this entire thing, is that when you talk about all these sports leagues that have shut down, let's not forget the part that we did get the one UFC event in Brasilia. We've gotten AEW, WWE. We are talking about performers that are non-unionized. And would this even be a discussion point if such an association or union were in place? Because it's not as though the NBA could just snap their fingers and not get some pushback from the Players Association about the health and safety of their athletes to participate in games at the moment.
Two other news notes I wanted to ask you about, recent stuff as of this morning. So ESPN's airing of WrestleMania 30 popped a rating, nice rating, over 800,000 viewers on Sunday night. They have a couple more of these leading into the big show. You know, for some that caught part of it, it was as expected. It was mainly an infomercial for WrestleMania for the WWE Network, but you know, no big surprise there. But it drew a really good rating, so that's you know, all things considered, good for them. And then also that Takeover, instead of doing a traditional Takeover event or something like Mania, these matches are going to take place weekly on NXT TV. Over the next few weeks, which is interesting. It makes sense if you're not going to do a single event. I thought they would do something maybe the Wednesday before Mania, maybe a special 2-hour, 3-hour show just for a Takeover event. But obviously they're going a different direction. But any thoughts on those two items?
No, I mean, the WrestleMania number, I mean, I don't put a whole lot of stock into any of the numbers right now, but it's, you know, it's, I think the only thing you can maybe take away from these three airings on ESPN is how ESPN views these numbers. And is this a bridge to something more with WWE down the line? And if you can see, there's a major emphasis ESPN is placing on combat sports and by extension, professional wrestling through they just re-aired both Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder fights over the weekend. Mm. The UFC, they have heavily leaned on for content, past and present, and now WWE as well. So I think it's that's really the only takeaway you can take from these numbers of how much stock ESPN puts into them, and seeing pro wrestling as something that could be on the table for more, which is certainly indicative of the philosophical shift in ESPN from the John Skipper days versus the Jimmy Pitaro era.
Mm. Let's talk about UFC. Dana White, yes, yesterday, 99.9% done this location for April's UFC 249.
What is that 0.1%? What is that 0.1%? Like, that to me would be, it's not completed, but that's a very small 10th of a percentage point that he is just reluctant to say we have a location.
That's as much as he's willing to give that the virus is a serious thing, John. That's that he's just going to give it that point, that 10th of a percent. He's like, look, I'll give you a little bit coronavirus, but other than that, this show must go on. So
outside of any like politicians, is there anyone that has come off worse in this than Dana White? And I say that with like sincerity.
Well, we're just media weenies, though, right? We're the biggest wimps in the world because we dare ask questions or you know, all this stuff. Yeah, it's
like this is a guy that seems like he is like self-destructing on a day-to-day basis. Like, say what you will about the decision of, you know, pro wrestling groups to go ahead of things, and you know, by extension, it's, you know, most prominent figure Vince McMahon. I can only imagine what Vince McMahon is thinking and saying privately, but this is not a guy that's going out and doing every interview imaginable and just venting his frustrations. This feels like Dana White is going through his early 2001 Vince McMahon launching the XFL period, where he was just losing his mind on TV every week. Like, this is his Armin Katayan moment, his Bob Costas moment. Yeah. Like, that to me is like Dana White present day.
Well, who would be the one source that could actually, you know, take some chinks in the armor, though? ESPN, and ESPN's not going to touch this with a 10-foot pole in terms of any type of like major criticism. I have heard, and I don't watch a lot of ESPN, but you know, typically when these discussions happen on a First Take or they happen on, you know, Get Up or any in their talk shows that they do, and PTI, I understand, is not running, but I haven't heard any of these talking heads actually discuss this, the merits of this at all. It's more like they're just kind of staying clear of it, which kind of tells you, okay, they're you know, the drive in terms of criticism to drive the public into a point where they're really starting to question this outside, you know, the MMA bubble, It's just not happening. And obviously you're not hearing anything about Fox Sports saying anything. It's everyone just kind of wants to look the other way on it, where, you know, it's not that, and I mentioned this to Jack Encarnacio last week, is, you know, Endeavor is completely invisible in this whole thing. And they own the UFC. And Dana, this is why he gets paid so much money, is basically they're like, you're going to take the hit for this. And he is more than happy to take that for, because he hates the media. He just doesn't like it. It's very similar to Donald Trump in a lot of ways. And it's very much a go on the attack, and we're going to keep doing this no matter what. And the media may tell you otherwise, but we're going to keep doing this, even though, you know, there's a lot of people are simply asking questions like, you know, what's your testing? What is this plan? What's this plan? And really, what is the rush? What is the need to keep doing this, other than just to keep trying to prove people wrong? And, you know, I mentioned this, I think it was last year, Jeremy Botter and I were talking about this media persecution thing that Dana has, and really kind of kicked up in the last 12 months, 18 months or so. He's really just, he mentions this a lot, this phrase of everyone keeps doubting me, and I'm not sure why they keep doing this. In this case, I don't think people are doubting that the UFC and Dana White could do a show. I don't think there's any, at this point, after doing, you know, hundreds of shows, he knows better than anyone else in the world how to put on an MMA event. I have no doubt about that. It's really just the rationale of, amid all these things going on and all these regions of the world, these new pockets of the virus coming up and all this. And, you know, even in Japan, there's questions about, you know, should they be running all these big shows already so quickly after the virus is quote unquote cleared or to the point where they want to live life again. It's not a question of can he do it? It's that, should they do it? He's not even willing to entertain that. And I think that's what's really driving the big amount of pushback.
Yeah. And it's almost kind of like, I can't fault any of the fighters that are so pushing for these events to happen, because that's again, a big equation of all of this is that people, like, their lives here, their way of making a living is at stake. Like, they don't fight, they're not getting paid. So that's a big part of this. Like, it's not as though, to Bellator's credit, like, they covered everybody for that card a few weeks ago in Connecticut. We haven't heard anything about the cards that have been postponed. Like, what is happening there? Are we guaranteeing that those fights are all going to happen at a later date? Because these fighters, they've paid for these camps. Like, they have been preparing for these fights. If you're, like, throw a name out there, Chris Weidman getting ready for his fight, which was to be the first weekend of May. Are you still training right now? Can you train right now? And do I even have a fight at the end of all of this? Like, we can't guarantee some of these fight nights are not going to be postponed as well. So I really do feel for the fighters that are in limbo at the moment. And I think even if you're an optimist thinking this 249 card will happen, it's all of the other, like, where is this going to be taking place? Do I really want to be flying right now? Like, what kind of problems am I inviting? And continuing on that point, like, what kind of risk are we putting others at here? Because again, it's not just yourself you're putting at risk by participating in this. It's that you could be spreading this unwillingly and others are impacted by this as well. So I really give a lot of credit to the companies that have just kind of put their hands in the air and said, listen, there are way too many questions right now. We just do not know. So we're going on pause. Ring of Honor, Impact, New Japan, there's many others as well that have just, you know, they have suspended operations. They are not moving forward with shows because it's just, there's too much potential risk. And you can assess it as low to medium risk, but it's not zero. And to me, I understand the financial hit. Everybody is getting hit in some way. But I think that there's going to be pain in all of this. Let's keep it as small as possible on the financial front and not be looking back 3 months saying we really pushed our luck way too much when we should have been pulling back, which is the period we're in right now.
Yeah. And so he said that there's going to be a full card. And I was looking, there is, as of right now, there's a full card for 249 from top to bottom. And I was looking at them. There's fighters from all over the world on this show. There's some Russian fighters, there's US fighters, there's some Brazilian fighters. There's a mix. And you're kind of wondering, like, depending on what the location is, no matter where it is, people are going to be flying and traveling from somewhere. There's no way to get around that. And all these countries have different travel bans, all these places. I mean, look at the UK. you know, that was a week ago, was relatively a quiet zone, and they admitted they messed up on how they've controlled this thing, and now it's just spiking. I mean, I just, how are you going to get people in? I there's so many questions about it, and it's not can they do it? It's really, should they be doing it? And again, you know, this comes from, we're so desensitized as with the WWE stuff, and it's, yes, it'll give people something to watch, and yes, but, you know, that Brasilia show didn't even do that well. Granted, it was on Saturday afternoon, but, you know, all things considered, it wasn't like people are so clamoring that they'll watch anything. And the thing that actually Kevin Ioli brought up on his the Instagram Live with Dana was, have you thought, you know, is this still going to be a pay-per-view? And if so, you know, are you going to, basically, have you considered dropping the price, considering at that point that you're looking to do this, you know, a lot of people will be out a ton of money and all this stuff just because of the unemployment and all this. And Dana was basically like, you know, how much money have I lost on this, right? Or how much money, you know, basically that they're hurting through all this. And so they can't possibly think about doing a pay-per-view that would cost less, which is just, you know, look, I'm not going to tell them to reduce pay-per-view prices or anything like that. But I mean, I am certainly not crying for a organization that just gave out $250 million to their stockholders 3 weeks ago that I'm sure they'd love to have back, or that they get guaranteed money every month from ESPN for their pay-per-views. And, you know, just there's no empathy there. And even when he does say, you know, he tries to be empathetic, it's just not sincere. And I think it was a great point you made earlier. Through this whole thing, Vince McMahon has not been public at all. Dana White has, and he's the one taking the bullets, and there's just something that doesn't feel right about it. And this is coming from someone that loves to watch these fights. It just doesn't feel right. And I don't think even if we get to mid-April, you know, I wouldn't root against the UFC, but I just want to see, once they have this location announced, how they're able to pull this off in a way that is safe. And again, can you imagine if somebody was to get this at an event, you know, if one of the fighters was popular, like, can you imagine this scenario? I was actually thinking about today when I was snow blowing the driveway. We get to fight week, and in, we'll say Saudi Arabia or, you know, one of these places overseas that the UFC has fought in before. I think the last Khabib fight, is that in Saudi Arabia, or am I thinking of somewhere else?
No, that was in... It was in Abu Dhabi.
Abu Dhabi. So say this is in Abu Dhabi, which seems to be fit for whatever reason. I don't know why. I have this weird feeling it's going to be there. So, and all of a sudden, you know, the Friday fight week approaches, and all of a sudden, you know, Khabib starts running a temperature, God forbid, or Tony Ferguson or someone on the co-main event, and they're all around. I mean, can you imagine, like, the main event of this thing falling through for a fifth time because one of these guys has this thing and it just happens to hit while they're over there? That would just seem to be, like, the most UFC thing ever with this whole thing. And I would hate for that to happen, but I don't know. It's playing with fire, man. And to your point, just you call it good. We're still going to be here when you come back in May or June. You're going to put together these pack shows with all these great fights. We'll be there with our money in hands, like that meme, you know, take all my money. I just, it is a risk for essentially no, just to give some people, you know, a million people some entertainment. Is that kind of what we're talking about?
It is. And it's also, I mean, like, we're looking at a pay-per-view that's set for April 18th, and God knows what the state of things are going to be in 3 weeks from now. Like, I don't know how you could feel confident planning for anything 3 weeks from now, where it's assembling fighters from various points. Like, there's going to be, like, what are travel situations going to be like? What is going to be the, is this going to ramp up and airlines are going to start restricting flights and fighters, I don't think, are going to qualify as essential flights at this point in terms of, you know, sending them to different countries. And will they be able to come back without having to quarantine? I mean, there's so many other questions. And this does apply to WWE, because post-WrestleMania, then they have to assess this again. Like, what's our plan after April 6th, like, where are we going with that? Is it back to the Performance Center for round two? Is the Performance Center going to be an option for us? Will we be limited in who we can use? Will it just be Florida based? Will people in Florida be encouraged not to leave their homes? Like, there's way too many questions. And that's where I think you get to the root of the frustration of two people that Dana White and Vince McMahon, and I don't think we know enough of Tony Khan long term to know if he, you know, is in the same category. But for Vincent McMahon and Dana White, we have enough of a track record of these two guys who are very much control freaks. And I used the analogy the other day, like if you wanted to describe Vince McMahon, this is a man that if he were to wake up in the morning and see a snowstorm outside, would look up and say, no, I don't agree with this, and expect to have an argument like that. This doesn't work for me. This is real life that is interrupting mine. And that to me is Vince McMahon to a T. And this is an extreme case where the control is almost out of his hands, but he has been able to maintain a grasp on it to it. I'm sorry that this pandemic has occurred, but it's happening during WrestleMania season.
Couple more questions to round the bend. Before all this, AEW, it's been, what, about a year since we last spoke, and obviously a lot's changed with the launch of AEW and this this group that has come on, really, you know, taking the business by storm in a lot of ways. And, I mean, we are the co-opted AEW website of record. I don't know if you're aware of that. You know, Dave works for the company, and Brian and things like that. I don't know if you're aware of, you've heard that or not, but... yeah. So
it's silly.
It is very much so. But I will say, you know, overall, I really enjoy the AEW product. It's got me back into watching a weekly product pretty intently again, which I hadn't had in quite some time. Other than obviously, you know, WWE to an extent, but it's just really hard to kind of watch some of that stuff from week to week just because it's not entertaining. But AEW, you know, with Dynamite, you know, I don't really get into Dark anymore, but Dynamite itself on a weekly basis, it's a really fun show to watch. They have their low points, no doubt, but it's overall, you know, I'm glad they're around, and I get so frustrated with the everyone seems to want to take a side, and it's so weird. Like, why does an NXT fan or WWE fan need to feel like they can't like, and maybe this is probably just a small amount of people on Twitter, but you know, why do they have to feel like they don't have to like the other group? Just don't watch it or watch it all and enjoy it. Like when I was a lot younger and there was WWE and there was WCW and there was like ECW and Smoky Mountain Wrestling and all these other ones, I couldn't wait just to keep ingesting more and more and more. Because I loved it all, and I didn't feel like I had to pick a side. I preferred maybe one over the other, but I definitely didn't feel like I had to, like, put down the other one to the point of, like, it's just absurd, like, what people are doing on social. It's such a weird thing. Like, there's so much good wrestling out there, both the big groups and smaller groups. And this AEW versus WWE, like, civil war on social media is the weirdest thing to me, and I just... I don't know if it's based out of the political wars. I don't know what it is, but like just enjoy it all and have fun with this. This is the good stuff when you have two groups trying to one up each other. That's what makes this good. That's creativity. And yeah, so going back to the original point, I enjoy AEW on a weekly basis. Curious, I assume you do the same, but want to get your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little different here in Canada because NXT does not air live here on Wednesday nights. Mm. So if you're just on television, at least, I mean, you can go through good old alternative means to watch NXT live. But AEW does air live here in Canada on TSN. So no, I think that if you're to look at where they were in October to today, and granted, I mean, this period they're going through now, you know, it's difficult for everybody, but I would say as of a couple of weeks ago, like you have to look at AEW as a home run by they achieved what they set out to do when they got the renewal with TNT and how far ahead of their plan they are now. I think that AEW, it's got to be maybe on one hand with fingers left over the episodes of Dynamite that I've left where I've either been disappointed or, you know, leaving, like, I think they hit that low point on that December 18th show with the Dark Order beatdown. That seemed to be like the low point. And look what the response was. It was, they could have gone in, and this was very telling at the time. It could have been all these critics, all these haters. They just want to complain about everything. That could have been their attitude. Instead, they came back 2 weeks later with that New Year's Day show and they knocked it out of the park. And there has been a noticeable difference in the presentation of that product. And I think sometimes we kind of overplay, like Dynamite, yes, it had that bad episode and bad ending, but I still thought Dynamite by and large was a pretty enjoyable show during that era. But I think this year the improvements have been notable and they have taken a lot of it's very difficult in this world to filter in what is the constructive criticism and what is, I like to call it, destructive criticism, that is just complaining for the sake of it and doesn't really have much substance to it. And you can get lost in that stuff and extrapolate that kind of criticism to the overall. I think there's people that have a lot of valid critique. And as long as you can still separate those two, if you're in AEW's position, I think that that's a strong sign that they can look at their product in as objective a form as possible. I think we all have that struggle to be able to hear people. You know, I will get criticism all the time, and I think I have a pretty good handle of understanding that's a valid criticism. That was something that we can improve upon, and I'm sure in your line of work as well. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a long answer to, like, where AEW is today, that I think, you know, barring this, you know, period that all these companies are going through, I think you have to look at them. They're in great shape, and they have provided meaningful change. Like, at the very base, they have created a much better environment for talent. And that, to me, you can't dispute that fact. And presenting things in a unique and different way. While also, you know, you have NXT. I think, honestly, like, the having both shows, you're naturally inviting that comparison point. And it is, like, it can be very toxic at times to see the tribalism on both sides attack one another. I get more amused by it, you know, when I throw out, like, the numbers and just back and forth. It's like, yeah, watching, like, the spin room after a debate or something like that. Like, it's kind of comical to me. But I also look at it that for wrestling fans that grew up in the Monday Night War, like, they were trained to view these wrestling products in, like, they literally coined this a war. And I think that there are fans that just, that is how they view things. It's like, man, I've got those ratings come out, I've got my chamber full of bullets and I am ready to go. And that's kind of, I mean, I hope it's a small percentage of the overall fan base, but it is wild to see. Like, I don't know what 1998 Twitter would have been like, but I have no idea. But, you know, there is some responsibility, I think, on the companies that really did kind of perpetrate this kind of vitriol. And I think at the end of the day, there's, you know, you can find a healthy competition to push either side. And I think that there is some healthiness to that. There's also some awfulness that comes with that attached, for sure.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. I'm trying to think, is there anything you don't like about the product or something you'd like to see them some change? I'll throw out a couple. One, yeah. And these are more like kind of like inside baseball stuff. Their pay-per-views are kind of buried when it comes to, like, getting them in an archive. Cause so I bring this up, I was thinking about this, that, you know, it'd be great if they were to unearth some of the footage from, like, the first All Out or the Double or Nothing shows or things like that, and put some of the stuff maybe on TNT in this kind of this weird era that we're in. And if you go right now, like, the pay-per-view still costs $50 per replay to watch. This stuff was, like, you know, last year. To me, that's just kind of like, I know they don't have a network, but some way to kind of, like, make use of some of that old footage instead of trying to have people pay $50 to watch it. I think it's kind of a barrier to some of those great matches. So my hope is that's one good thing WWE has done with some of these, like, Raws and SmackDowns, is they're using recent archival footage and matches. And I think that's good, because they're kind of, you know, it's something to kind of fill some time. And I think they used it smartly with, like, the Royal Rumble, kind of telling the Brock and Drew story. Maybe some people that have not been that familiar with it. So that's one thing. I don't like the picture-in-picture when it comes to the ads. I think it's distracting. I fast forward through them anyway. I just think it's Jim Ross does, you know, say what you will about Jim Ross, it's not a natural break. We're so used to wrestling, like, when it goes to the break, there's an uptick right before the break or something big that happens, and you go and you come back and you kind of, like, pick things back up again. It just hurts the flow of the product. There's stuff going on that you're seeing and you're like, is this that important? And I think they've got a little bit better at it, but I don't like the picture-in-picture when it comes to the ads. And it's weird when they choose to do it. There's some things where it's like there's, like, a main event, they'll actually go to a traditional commercial, then early on in the show in a nothing happening match, they'll do the picture-in-pictures. So that's kind of weird. You know, those are a couple things. In terms of the in-ring product, you know, I think people said, you know, that the female talent just isn't on par with, say, NXT right now, or even, you know, WWE. You know, my guess is that's just going to take time and some signings to kind of help bulk that up. But I think they've finally kind of found a sweet spot with who should be on Dark and who should be on the main show. And I think they've got a lot smarter with that. They still have a rather big roster in terms of people they have, you know, affiliations with, and, you know, they aren't beholden to exclusive contracts, but I think they're kind of trying to figure that out. You know, we'll see obviously when they introduce this new show, whenever that is, you know, at this point, this year with TNT. So yeah, those are a couple things that kind of crossed my mind. Any criticisms, things you'd like to see them change or adapt?
Yeah. There's definitely some of those that I would agree with. I think I can't look at anything like wholesale changes I would make, because largely I think it's a pretty solid program, but I think you could certainly look at certain tweaks and things. I don't think that the introduction of the records, I don't think those have really hit with people, like, because I looked at it, you know, I know there was a lot of negativity when they were introducing the records, and I saw the philosophy behind it and where it could work. I just don't think it's been executed to get the maximum value of what you could out of that. That's a small thing. I think that Jim Ross has, like, you can see he certainly came into this. And I really do sympathize with this point that there's the argument that, you know, it's very difficult for him to call Orange Cassidy or Chris Statlander's origin story. And I think he's very much trying to balance, like, he is there to be the credibility on that broadcast, that Jim Ross has that kind of weight, so that when you have to utilize Jim Ross for what I would dub a money segment, like that sit down interview he did with the Elite ahead of Revolution or others of that, like, Jim Ross carries that weight, and he's been fantastic in those sit down interviews. And I think you have also seen him admit that he has come around on an Orange Cassidy. And I think you've seen the patience in that three-man booth that they, I think if you were to go back to some of those early episodes, their chemistry and flow has improved exponentially. There's a lot of darkness in this company, a lot of groups that are just very, very dark. I think we have like our high premium on that. And yes, I think the roster at this point, with the additions of Brody Lee, the additions of Matt Hardy, you know, you don't want to make a hard and fast, okay, we're on a hiring freeze or anything like that, because you have to be nimble enough that if something becomes available, your options are open. But it is a pretty packed roster at the moment. And it's not so much a detriment that a guy is on 1 week and we don't see him for 2 or 3 weeks, but I think that you have to have your key stories and characters in place, that if someone is not here this week, there's at least some kind of an update. Like, Kenny Omega returns next week. Kenny Omega will address last week's beatdown a week from now, or just keeping people in circulation. And you are going to have those lower talents that are going to be cycled in and out and have less prominence on them. But it is a pretty loaded roster. And I think you can fall into the trap. I thought TNA was always guilty of this, particularly in like the mid-2000s, that we're going to get everybody over. Right. And it was a struggle every week and every pay-per-view, that we had to get every last person onto every pay-per-view, multi-mans, everything, to get these people on. The Royal Rumble matches that they would do ad nauseum. And in the end, it just was, you'd come away from those shows and your head is spinning. I would much prefer that, you know, we have, and I think they're kind of at that place. Like, we have our A story, our B story, our C story, and then it's what else fills out the card. And, you know, 65% of our focus is going to be on those A, B, and C stories. So those are just some things I see with Dynamite. But I think overall, you see a company that they are not afraid to do things differently, and know that different often will be rewarded by this crowd, because they want to see stories that they can invest in, and that something is not just going to be a throwaway that I'm not going to get any payoff on. I think it's imperative that they finish off their stories, that people are rewarded for noticing little things, for getting those little Easter eggs that might be just thrown in there, but people are going to know that that's not going to just be dropped. I noted that, and I'm going to get rewarded for it down the road.
You remember when remember when Sean Spears did a high profile match and angle with Cody Rhodes? It seems like years ago, that, right?
Exactly. And I've talked about this a lot. Like, I just think Tully Blanchard, the times I see him and this guy's not cutting promos and not being utilized, I mean, that to me is like, if Sean Spears is not going to be one of those featured guys, like, I think you should have Tully with somebody, or else I don't really know what Tully's role is, if it's just to be, you know, recruiting tag team partner of the week for Sean Spears on Dark. because I think Tully's fantastic in that role.
And now you have a similar role, Jake Roberts and Lance Archer. And it was so weird just to kind of see them just sitting in the crowd last week. That's one thing I didn't like about last week's show was just Lance Archer, this guy that just debuted, and there was a nice pop for him, and people seemed to be excited. And he's just kind of sitting like a geek in the seats. It was just strange to me. I wouldn't have had him out there for that. It would have kept him a little bit more special, or just, you know, bring him out for a quick promo, something like that, where, you know, Jake says something like that, just something really quick. But just to have him kind of sit out there just took away from the aura a little bit.
I had a lot of issues with Dynamite last week. I mean, if you're just assessing it as a show, how they pulled off a show, you can give them very high marks. I don't disagree with that. But in terms of the aesthetics, like the amount of people that were there, that I'm watching this show and I'm just seeing all these people ringside and thinking to myself, well, they have to be here for more than this. They must be taping next week's show. And I can understand that. So when that was not being done, I think you certainly have to look at, and granted, this is they're learning by the week of how to pull these off and what is safe, what is not. But, you know, you're watching that. You're also putting wrestlers out there to be wrestlers, and they're going to act a certain way. Like one spot, for instance, was the Butcher. He's selling on the floor, and Colt Cabana just leans over and like swipes his back with his hand. And it's, you know, Butcher's all sweaty. So Colt Cabana, being Colt Cabana, what he would do in that situation, just takes the hand and exaggerates as he wipes it onto the curtain that's over the guardrail. And it's just like, you are in an environment now that's very different from where everyone was a week ago. And again, it's just, I'm watching this with a very different mindset just because of everything that's going on, and just constantly, is this the best idea? And, you know, these companies, like, that's all you can hope for, is that they're trying to mitigate risk at every turn. And that's the main thing, because I think we all just feel awful, like, if there is any wrestler that gets infected. And, you know, then we, I think, will certainly be ramping up that question. Like, was this essential? And are we putting these performers first when we're deciding to go ahead with these shows?
Final question. What'd you think of the Dark Side of the Ring Benoit doc? Have you seen the whole thing yet? I assume you have.
I have seen the whole thing. Yes. It was a really, really heavy documentary to sit down and watch. I had the documentary and kind of it just put it off. And then one night, just on a whim, I sat down to start it. And I would say in about 5-6 minutes, I just was not in the mindset to kind of go through all of this right now. So I had to kind of put it off before I was like, I knew I had to watch it in time for this week and everything. Finally got through it, and it's really tough. Like, you know, Josh, you were following it at that time as well. Like, that's a period of time that I will always remember, that summer of 2007, that it just felt every single day was Benoit, Benoit, Benoit. And like, just, it was a period where you just, like, it was my job. I had to be following all this, covering it, but I certainly wasn't really enjoying the industry at this point. And it was, to go back to all of that, there's some just heartbreaking moments in this documentary. Many of them, I felt exceptionally sympathetic towards David Benoit. And I don't think we, you know, to hear it in his words and seeing the home videos with Daniel, I mean, that guy was such a victim in all of this, that through no fault of his own was thrust with all of this at such a young age, that has had to grow up with this man as his father, who he still identifies as his hero. And he would have every right to be furious at this man for what he did. And, you know, it was as much a therapy session, I think, for the interview subjects as it was a documentary filming. And I think probably very therapeutic for those involved that got to be in an environment where I think they trusted those that were putting together the documentary to not sensationalize things, but reflect and see these individuals that were greatly torn between this final weekend with a man that they held in the highest regard for all those years before it. And I actually got to speak with Jeff Merrick this week. He was the former host of The Law, Live Audio Wrestling. Yeah. and had a very close relationship with Chris. So we're I don't mean to just like segue into like a plug or whatever, but it's just talking to him the other day was, you know, he came away with like a lot of the same feelings. Like it was a very difficult watch for him. And, you know, something that I think so many of us were at that time period, the biggest question was why? And today, like I've given up trying to answer that question, because I don't think there's ever going to be an answer that it provides any kind of explanation for that. There is no explanation for the end of how someone could commit those acts.
Yeah. It's the footage is startling isn't the right word. It's arresting in a lot of ways, because this is stuff you haven't seen before. Pictures, the videos, that's what kind of got me. And I went to this, I wouldn't say desensitized, but it's been such a long time, and this is like, it's not really a daily part of my life. And I wanted to kind of, I'm glad that there's some that they're telling the story versus someone that's trying to sensationalize it in a story, like in a book or something like that, where it's just you don't know if the intentions are really good. I think that having talked with the co-creators before and, you know, having seen this series, I'm glad they did it in season two, because I think they got a lot of buy-in for what they did for that first season of Dark Side of the Ring, and how well these documentaries were put together and the stories were put together, that they were able to get the people that you heard from. You heard from Chris Jericho, Dean Malenko, Dean Malenko's wife, Vicky Guerrero. And all these others, David Benoit, we mentioned. It was just, it actually provided some of that insight and color that we needed. And then you see these videos of just him with a kid. It's just like, my God. As a father, it strikes you. As a wrestling fan, it strikes you. It's just this incredible story that, again, like, we hope we never, ever see again. But it happened. And we just have to try to figure out, how to avoid this happening in the future. And just this... Yeah, I mean, just this weird period in the business where guys are just getting so big, and just the damage, and we weren't the era of self care was not was not the era of self care, is what I'm trying to say. Today, with mental health, physical health, all these things, where we are getting better at looking at these things, saying it's okay to talk, it's okay to admit that you're not as strong as everyone thinks you are, and it's crazy. You harken back to an era that just is. It just was not like that. And you wonder if he was having those same issues today, would he feel more comfortable opening up? And these are things we'll never have answers to, but it is well put together. The footage is amazing. And it really helps tell this story. And I'm looking forward to the rest of the series, as I was interested watching the first one. And, these guys have really kind of fit this niche that I think needed to be filled, and especially in this content era, it's very welcome stuff, even if the subject matter is a bit heavy.
Yeah, I agree with you on the front that I don't think you could have come out of the gate with this one in season one. I don't think you, I don't know if you would have necessarily gotten the buy-in from all of the people involved, and you know, from the creators. I mean, like Chavo Guerrero was an enormous part, like serving as a director on this, to be able, I don't think if you have Chavo part of this, the others would be as willing to sit down and talk about this. I mean, we've never heard Vicky open up to this degree about not just Eddie, but Benoit as well. It's heartbreaking at times, but I think that you really have to applaud them for the way in which they went about this documentary and speaking to so many of the parties that were directly impacted by this.
So let's get some plugs in there. You mentioned Jeff Merrick interview. Kind of tell people, if they aren't familiar, how they subscribe to Post Wrestling, how they engage with the content, stuff you have coming up. The floor is yours.
Well, thanks. You can go check out postwrestling.com. That's where kind of everything funnels through. If you want to support us, we run our Patreon, which is at postwrestlingcafe.com. We do several bonus shows a week, and that kind of keeps things running, allowing us to do this full time. So we do have the Jeff Merrick interview dropping right after Dark Side of the Ring tonight. It'll be up midnight Eastern time, if you want to check that out, depending on when people are listening to this show. And one other thing is that next week on Thursday, April 2nd, Wei and I are doing a special show. We usually do a live show called the Cafe Hangout. We're doing it at 2 p.m. Eastern time next Thursday. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be having a series of guests on, and we're going to be raising some money for several organizations regarding the whole COVID-19 pandemic. So there's nothing we're going to be making off of this. We're going to be making donations after that from money we raise on this show. So if you want more information on that, you can go to postwrestling.com. That's where all of our shows and news live. And it's always great to catch up with you, Josh. So I enjoy our yearly chats, which I found out in the subject line was a thing that it's each year we end up talking.
I know. But around this time, around WrestleMania time. Also, you can follow John on Twitter. I am John Pollock, if you don't already. And if I can throw in a plug for John as well, I cannot remember when you released this. This must have been maybe last year. Go listen to John's audio documentary, is the best way of putting it, on Owen Hart. Was it last year?
Yeah, it was right around. It was right around the
summertime, right?
It was May. Yeah, May. We put it out.
So I finally listened to it a while ago, but it was it's excellent, and I'm so jealous is the right word. I'm very envious you were able to pull this off, and you've done this before. You did the oh my God, I'm blanking.
I did a few on, you know, there was the weekend of UFC 199, which was a very last minute idea I had that was extremely exhausting because I put that together in like 3 or 4 days, and it was just I was nearly delirious by the end of it. But it was just this culmination, like all these things happened that I guess the way my brain works, like there were just these different intersection points. So my idea was just to do like a timeline, and it kind of just migrated into this larger idea. Like that was the week, like Muhammad Ali passed away. Kimbo Slice passed away that week. There was everything involving Ariel Helwani with that event at UFC 199. So I did one on Ronda Rousey as well. So I've done a few of them. So, thank you very much. I got like a lot of great feedback to that. It was a long process to put it together, but I was pretty happy with the final product.
Excellent stuff. So yeah, I would definitely recommend if you guys are looking for something additional to listen to, check any of those. The Rousey one, the UFC 199 one, especially the Owen Hart. And I know you did a like a round table after that, if I remember that, on the Post Cafe. Certainly tweet John if you can't find that link, but it is it's good stuff. It's that we don't have a lot in this space, which is kind of like piqued my interest. Throw that to the side, but this audio documentary in the wrestling and MMA space is excellent. So hopefully looking forward to maybe hearing more of those in the future. John Pollock, thank you so much. Be safe up there, and hopefully it won't be another year till we talk to you.
I'm always around, Josh, and same to you and your family.
All right. Big thanks to John Pollock for stopping by. You can always follow him on Twitter. I am John Pollock, and check out Post Wrestling, all that good stuff he just talked about at the end. So let's get into this Tuesday interview that got posted with Dana White by Yahoo's Kevin Ioli, past guest of the show, many moons ago. So I'm actually going to play 2 cuts from this. If you haven't heard it, I would encourage listening to the whole thing. It's about 28 minutes or so, 25 minutes, and it's worth checking out. You don't have to sit intensely and watch it. You can actually listen to it, you know, like a podcast or anything like that. But it's right on Yahoo's website, very easy to find. So a few of the poll quotes that got pulled from yesterday, obviously, you know, more the sensational type, but more kind of the idea. I want to actually play them for you in full because I want to kind of give you the context. This first one is probably the one that got the most buzz, which is about Dana White and saying that the media doesn't need to know anything.
You know, I just don't understand your reluctance to say whether they're going to be tested, because if they're going to be tested, I think people feel better about it.
Yeah. The less the media knows, the better. You know, I'm going to tell you right now, you're one of the very few guys that I actually like and trust. And, let me just put it to you this way. A lot of this hysteria and all this stuff that's gone on has been driven by the media. And the less the media knows, the better off it is. Listen, you've known me for a very long time. And all of my employees that work for me, you know, when my fighters are with me and my people are with me, they're getting the best medical attention they could possibly get. If they were alone or if they were home or if they were, worked for somebody else, everybody who's with me is going to get the best medical attention possible. And, the less the media and the public know, when I say you guys, take that whatever. You don't need to know. It's none of your business.
All right. So we have that first one. So it's very interesting because he, you know, whatever political spectrum where you fall on that spectrum, left, right, center. You know, that's where I consider myself more of a moderate than anything else. I don't like politics at all. I think it's destructive. Get off the soapbox there. You know, his terminology and the way he talks and certain things he says, it sounds just like the president of the United States, Donald Trump. It sounds exactly like that. The distrust of the media, they're putting the media down. And this has been a Dana thing for a long time. But saying that, you know, the public and the fans don't, you know, they don't need to know, you know, there is a somewhat of a truth to that, and that it technically is not their business. However, I would argue that in a global pandemic like that's happening right now, and this thing is still spreading in all types of countries, including our own here in the States, that it might be good to have some sort of visibility and something to say, here's what we're doing for this. I can't imagine another league, sports league, really running from this. This is an organization, the UFC, that said they always run towards regulation. And on this flip side, they are basically saying, we're not going to tell you anything. It's strange. And part of that is because people just don't, the public, or a lot of the media simply don't trust Dana White to do the right thing. And that this whole thing is very strange. Not that they don't want to see fights, not that we don't want to see these things, the events every Saturday night, because really isn't anything going on, but that, is this the right thing to do? And do we trust Dana White in taking this seriously in his organization and Endeavor, which again, no one is talking about Endeavor. The fact that at any time, the owners of Endeavor, Ari Emanuel and the other guy, I'm completely blanking on his name, they could simply say, we're not doing this anymore, but they're not. So there is some responsibility there. And so, I mean, this is also why Dana White gets paid tens of million dollars a year to take the bullets like this, literally. So, you know, just the tone in which he goes about it is it's reminiscent of just this abrasiveness that he's always had, but this is unlike anything that we've heard in quite some time. And then where a lot of this is stemming from, and he's said that, you know, if fighters or staff don't feel comfortable, they don't have to be part of the event and what have you. I want to play the second cut, and this is about 2.5 minutes. This is one where basically he talks about not being afraid of the coronavirus, comparing it to a flu, and just kind of his philosophy about this.
The question becomes, how long are we going to do this?
Right.
How long are we really going to stay in our houses and hide? You know, if the coronavirus is what's going to get me, then so be it. I mean, it is what it is. Heart disease, car accidents, cancer, the list goes on and on of all these things that kill people every year. One thing is guaranteed. We're all going to die of something. You know what I mean? And you can't be somebody who's going to hide in your house for months. You're going to hide in your house for months for what? No way, man. Listen, to be honest with you, if this goes on for months, I got a great house to be locked up in, man. Let me tell you, my house was built for quarantine. We're having a blast over here. I'm spending incredible time with my kids and my family. I have, I'm doing 2-3-a-day workouts over here. You know, we're doing things that we haven't done with the kids since they were little. I can do this forever if that's what everybody wants to do. But is this really what we're going to do? Since when do Americans run and hide in their friggin' houses, instead of taking this thing head on and finding solutions? You find solutions in how do we continue to live our lives, protect the people that need to be protected. I don't think I'm a high risk guy for this thing. Maybe I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, then the corona's going to get me. All right. It is what it is. There's nothing you can
do. Well, I would just say, in all due respect, you are not a coronavirus expert.
I can live my life and I'm not going to hide.
I don't want to fight with you on this, so I'm going to end it at this. I'm just going to say
I'm right.
You are not a coronavirus expert, nor am I. I just would say listen to the doctors, right?
Yeah, but whether you're a coronavirus expert or not, it's like hiding from cancer. You can't hide from this thing. You can't hide.
But I can't get cancer from shaking your hand.
If you are a high-risk person, this thing's going to get you. What's going to happen next flu season? This thing's just going to disappear? No, it's going to come back just like the flu. And if it's what's going to get you, it's going to get you. So listen, Kevin, I've had a great run, right? If the coronavirus is what's going to get me, let's do it. Bring it. I'm ready, Corona. Come get me.
So if you're a fighter and you are fearful, if you're trying to, I would say respectful, but like appreciating kind of what's going on with this and you're heeding the you know, public's advice or the doctor's advice and what have you, medical professionals and staying inside and what have you, are you now conflicted because the boss of the whole company now says essentially he doesn't, that something is going to get you, so you might as well get out there and do it. Again, this is also reminiscent of kind of, you know, Trump's direction and so on. Not getting political, just saying you can kind of, the rhetoric is almost identical. It's almost like he's talking to him every day and getting this information. But just if you kind of listen, just the, you know, this is going to come back around. Are we going to go run and hide? Essentially, Dana White does not take the virus seriously. Like, he's quote unquote been quarantined in their house and what have you. But, you know, the fact he wants to get back to it so quickly makes me think that he doesn't realize that this could be potentially for some people a lot longer road to hoe. So it's just those cuts. I want, troubling is too strong of a word, but that just gives you, it just gives you a little bit of an indication of kind of why and what we're dealing with here when it comes to why he is so hell-bent on putting these events on, and essentially just eschewing the advice from people just to not congregate and so on. I would hate to see a type of COVID-19 outbreak in UFC if all of a sudden they have an event and everyone happens to get this. I without knowing kind of what steps they're taking, it is very bizarre to – that they're hiding this, and especially from a company that wants to be publicly known like Endeavor, it just seems to be completely irresponsible. And again, I can't imagine any other organization, Major League Baseball, the NFL, the NBA, NHL, whatever, name your sports league of choice right now that is not going, not being this hidden with their testing. And so imagine now, you know, everyone's talking about the NBA and the NHL potentially, you know, coming back. There's all this talk, essentially trying to give hope to some people that they're going to come back and establish some sort of normalcy. Imagine if they're like, we're not going to tell you, or, you know, the what's going to happen with this testing. Well, they wouldn't, because one of the things John mentioned, they have unions, and unions help protect this stuff. And there's zero chance in hell that a union would say, let's go do this right now without some sort of outlined, here's what we're doing at all times. To test people, there have to be tests, like almost you'd say before games, after games, you know, whatever it is. But you would have kind of the sense that they wouldn't do this. And this, you know, it's, again, the fact that they're hiding so much is bizarre. And they're doing it, and Dana's attitude, like, you know, about this is strange. And so usually what changes these type of things is the public saying this is not right. And usually what helps drive that is conversation. Conversation is traditionally started by sports news networks, namely ESPN and their reporters. And this, again, you kind of, there's been a lot of discussion as far as like, are they promotional? Are they a news division that's kind of dwindled over the years in terms of how they approach some things? Say whatever you want to say. There is no one on that network, and I don't believe there was any discussion of this morning, because I've seen no talk about it on my Twitter feed as far as any of the morning talk shows that they have driving any type of conversation about whether the UFC should be doing this and these specific comments. If this was Roger Goodell, if this was Gary Bettman, if this was Rob Manfred, Adam Silver, this would be the lead story. However, even the UFC is basically just avoiding all of this discussion about whether or not this is the right thing to do. ESPN is a partner of theirs. I think there's a big reason for that. And also, you know, at the end of the day, that fighting, it just is seen as just not at that level by people in those levels of media, producers, something like that. It's basically like, these guys are brutes. They're going to say this stuff, and it's just fighting. So who cares? It is, it's strange. It's very strange that there's no, again, there's no national media discussion about any of this. Perhaps that will change. You know, perhaps that'll change if we get closer to that date. Maybe when that date is announced this week, which it sounded like Dana White thought it would be, you know, maybe that adds a level of chatter to people talking about this and whether or not these events should happen, a demand to know what this type of testing is. And maybe the fire's just it's just a very strange time in the sport. And you're really kind of seeing the true colors of people that, you know, this is not a time to hide information, but you get a sense that everyone's trying to hide. And that obviously raises eyebrows, raises concerns about what is going on with this. And again, this isn't like we don't want to see WrestleMania, or we don't want to see a UFC event, or we don't want to see an AEW show. It's just, I think sometimes we want to feel good about what we're seeing and that everyone's on the level, even in a corrupt business like combat sports is, with a lot of bad people in it. But just this blatant of a, we're not going to tell you on purpose, it makes it seem very nefarious. And we'll see, you know, we'll see how this whole thing plays out. I would never root against it. The brazenness is what is shocking to me, even in this context. We shouldn't be surprised, but those quotes are, I don't know. Doesn't come off as trustworthy to me. And again, the dodginess, and it just, I don't know. So today, I saw an interview with Submission Ray that Francis Ngannou apparently did get tested and he might fight on UFC 249. Again, it is a very strange time. There was a report that maybe Florida had a combat sports MMA show last Saturday, I believe. And they were able to do it with no problem. I don't, you know, no fans in attendance, they were able to pull this off. So I guess there are several locations in Florida that are being considered to host this. And as Kevin mentioned during his interview with Dana White, he Abu Dhabi seems to be his choice. He thinks that might be the front runner, but it is just very bizarre. So perhaps, you know, more conversational pickup. And again, this isn't that we don't want the fights to not happen. It's just, why the secrecy? It makes it feel really, really scummy. And we'll have to see. Strange times in our world. Strange times. All right. So I've kept you long enough. If you have thoughts, you know, hit me up on Twitter, Josh Nason, JOSHNASON, or drop me an email, josh@wrestlingobserver.com. I think I'm going to call it good. So big thanks to John Paul. Thanks to all you for listening. You have a lot of choice in your podcast day, especially these days where you have a lot of time on your hands. Spend the time wisely. You know, if this is the time where you want to learn something, try some new, try out exercise, you know, things like that. Do whatever it is that's going to make you mentally strong through this, especially for a lot of you that are working from home for the first time or spending a lot of time at home. Go for a walk, do something, just, you know, live your life the best you can given the restrictions that we have right now. And spend the time wisely, again, as best you can, and get outside your, I don't say your comfort zone, but your normal comfort zone. Spending more time with friends, reconnecting with old friends, your family, reading, all those type of things, watching TV, whatever it is that's going to get you through. But do get some physical activity, because that's very important. As someone that's worked from home for a long, long time, just try to get out and do something, even if you're not interacting with the public. Find a trail, go walk, anything to do something to get the blood flowing and get your mind flowing as well. So I'll get off my soapbox again. Thank all you guys so much. Stay safe. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.